Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, science journalist David Ewing Duncan has taken the dictum, know thyself, to a new level. He's had his DNA, his brain, and his body tested in every way he could think of. He's the chief correspondent for Public Radio's Biotech Nation and a commentator on Morning Edition. And his new book, Experimental Man, What One Man's Body Reveals About His Future, Your Health, and Our Toxic World, is out. And he's here to tell us what he's learned from his guinea pig adventures. And then in a few minutes, and you can get in line right now if you want, we'll take your calls on what tests you have gotten, what tests you've decided against. And I think the most interesting question, what tests can't you decide whether to take? Which medical tests have you heard about and are you curious about, but that you're really ambivalent about and haven't yet signed up for? So if you want to get in line with any of those, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we'll go to those calls in a few minutes, but let's meet David Ewing Duncan, author of Experimental Man, What One Man's Body Reveals About His Future, Your Health, and Our Toxic World. Hi.
Hi.
What made you do this?
Well, maybe I have the insanity gene or perhaps the Pandora gene for curiosity, none of which have been discovered yet. But I came at this, I'm a journalist and I write about biotech and healthcare, and it started really as a way to communicate science, which is incredibly difficult to do. As I got into it, I got more and more curious about what the results would be. But I come from a healthy family. I'm somewhat fatalistic about my health. So it was probably more just out of curiosity to discover what was going on.
And just to give people a little bit of a sense of what was involved here, you opened the book with an experimental man index. And for people who know the Harper's Index, with all those quick rapid-fire stats, it was kind of in the Harper's Index format, the experimental man index, that says, for example, you had 1.7 liters of blood drawn, spent 22 hours in MRI machines, were tested for 7 to 10 million genetic markers, of which 122 were high risk. Do you know everything there is to know about yourself now?
I know an awful lot about myself, and that's one of the interesting things about this information. It's self-information of the sort that we haven't ever had before, but there's still a lot more I could know, but I got to tell you, I have such a massive pile of data here, all those millions of genetic markers and everything, that I think I know enough.
What's the most interesting thing you learned about yourself?
Well, I think if you're a healthy person, and we're talking about really a revolutionary way of looking at medicine here, if you will, it's healthy people being tested for what might happen in the future. And it's predictive medicine, preventive medicine. It's been talked about a lot. But probably, so I went into it and I actually discovered a lot that I don't have. I mean, a healthy person is not going to have a lot of things. And so that was a little bit of a sigh of relief. But I had some surprising news, and I didn't really expect to find out that much. But I did find out through some rather complex and high-tech tests that I have a high risk of heart attack, higher than normal.
Now, how do you find out that you have a higher than normal risk of heart attack? A lot of people would like to know that. A lot of people probably wouldn't like to know that. A lot of people sign up for these MRIs that get advertised on the radio a lot, right? These centers that are called executive health centers and these places that will do this, what is it? Is it a CAT scan of your heart and your arteries?
Well, yes. In fact, those are two different kinds of scans. It's the MRI and the CAT scan are different kinds. But normally what you hear about, at least for the heart, is the CAT scan. And that costs several hundred dollars. And I remember a few years back, my doctor said, hey, you want to get one of these CAT scans of your heart? You know, when President Clinton, you remember, he had this CAT scan, and he actually found something, and he had heart surgery. And I said, are you getting a little payback for this, my doctor? And he said, well, yeah. And I said, well, don't ask me about that. I'm a journalist.
That?
I'm going to write about this. And for most people, it's not necessary unless you have some indications. But this particular test combined, I got a CAT scan of my heart. It turned out to be healthy. I got what's called a carotid ultrasound, which is looking for cholesterol in your blood vessels of your neck, genetic tests, and then some rather complicated cholesterol tests. So those were all put together into one test.
And that's how they come up with a comprehensive heart attack risk.
Yeah. And this isn't available yet, but there is a company in South San Francisco that is developing this as a product. It's called Intellos as a company. And this should be out in a year or two, and it'll cost a few hundred dollars. And most of these tests I took, I actually was quite skeptical of, especially the genetic tests. But this one had a lot of traditional tests, like the CAT scan, the cholesterol test. There's a lot of data about that. And so I'm sitting in a room. They're giving me the results. And I noticed that these rather talkative people suddenly are not talking a lot, and they look a little white-faced. And so they present up on the wall a graph, and they tell me we thought I'd be healthy, but I end up with a 70% risk factor of having a heart attack in 20 years.
In 20 years, though?
Yeah. Well, and 40% in just 10. And it goes up. It's a very steep curve. So it starts at about 2 or 3% today and goes upward. And the curious thing about that, there's a little twist here, because it's tied to weight gain. If I gain a pound a year, mm-hmm. which is a common for a man over 40, mm-hmm. that's the average weight gain, mm-hmm. I have that rather steep risk profile. If I keep a stable weight, it's about a 2% risk for the next 20 years.
Is that why you're laughing?
I'm laughing because at the moment, I lost 10 pounds. And, you know, I wasn't that heavy anyway, but I have been slowly, you know, as a 50-year-old man, I've been slowly putting on, I probably was right on the trajectory there. And that is basically a potential death sentence for me, or at least, moaning on the ground with a heart attack.
But wait a minute. What did you really learn here? If you're 50 years old, doesn't every 50-year-old man in America have a 70% chance of having a heart attack in 20 years?
Well, actually, it's less than that. It's quite a bit less.
But, is it?
But it's not necessarily tied to weight. I mean, it depends on your particular profile, and that's what's so exciting about this particular test and this science. It can tell, you may have a completely different profile because – right now, all of those projections that you hear about, it's actually for a white male over 50, it's as much as a 42% risk factor. But that's all of us. That doesn't take an account. You know, I don't smoke. I mm-hmm. actually eat pretty well. I mm-hmm. exercise. And despite all that, so that should lower my risk. But in my case, my underlying genetics and some of my physiology is making me have a specific risk, which may be different than yours.
Before we get into some of the more obscure and interesting tests, one risk that I've read about with those complete body scans aimed at the arteries around the heart is that you might find something harmless and do yourself harm in the future just testing. Because, you don't want to get too many CAT scans because of radiation.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I had several rules going into this project. One was that I was under the supervision of a physician for most of the tests. Another one was do no harm to me. And I only violated that twice, and one of it was getting the full-body CAT scan, and that exposes you. It's hard to actually get actual results for the amount of radiation exposed, but it's far more than you would get, obviously, from normal exposure. And hopefully there are a couple studies that indicate that some at least repeated CAT scans can lead to cancer later on in your life. Those are in dispute by some. It's mm-hmm. still an open question. But clearly, you have to be careful about – yeah, but most of these tests were blood tests, spinning in a vial, and they take your DNA out of your saliva. And these were not harmful tests.
And you open the book with an account of testing your ability to eliminate mercury. Why do you want to test yourself for that?
Well, mercury is pervasive in the environment. More coal-burning power plants are built in Asia, us in California, I live in California, we're actually having clouds of these effluents. I mean, about 25% of the pollutants in L.A. right now, in Los Angeles, are actually coming from China. And some of that is mercury, and that's getting into the food chain, and especially into fish that we eat. And another reason is that I looked at that is because there's a lot of information. I mean, in the environmental section of the book is genes, environment, brain, and body. The environment section, that was a particularly easy one to study compared to some newer chemicals that are out there that there isn't much information on.
So the test is not how much mercury there is in your body. The test is about your body's ability to eliminate mercury.
Yeah, that seems to be what's going on. We seem to have, and this is somewhat preliminary information, but I think it's very exciting. It seems that some of us have a sensitivity to mercury. I mean, that's a known fact, but it may have a genetic component in our body's ability to be able to rid itself, especially in the brain. In brain cells, there are chemicals that actually flush out things like mercury. And if you have certain genetic variations, you may not flush out the mercury as fast. I mean, most of us get rid of mercury in 30 or 40 days. That's the cycle. if you're exposed. I mean, you can be constantly exposed mm-hmm. and have levels.
So based on these elimination tests, you can actually figure out if it's more or less safe for you as an individual to consume a lot of fish.
No, that's right. That's right. And these are large fish. I don't want to keep people from eating fish because fish are actually good for you.
Certain fish.
But yeah, I mean, large fish, you know, the FDA and other agencies recommend that, especially women of childbearing age and small children, really restrict the big fish. But I ran a little test, and this is the other time. I told you there were two times I did harm potentially to myself. The book starts with me catching a fish off the coast of California. It was a halibut. I had that for lunch, and then I bought a swordfish for dinner, two big fish, you know, lots of mercury in there. And I went from 4 parts per billion for mercury, which is below, that's considered in a safety, you know, safe level. I spiked up after those two meals to 13 parts per billion. Which is more than doubling just from those two meals. And that put me way over the safety threshold.
But if you eliminate it effectively, then it doesn't matter?
Well, this is research that still needs to be done. And I'm up on a soapbox almost these days saying that there should be more known about this. But clearly having, you know, large amounts of mercury on board is not a great idea. I came out okay. If you read the book, it looks like I'm sitting pretty for mercury for my genetic disposition. But I just found out just a few days ago that I have a couple of markers that suggest I am more sensitive to mercury than I first thought.
Interesting. Let's see. Before we go to some calls, and again, we're asking people, what tests have you taken? What tests won't you take? And maybe most interestingly, which medical tests are you ambivalent about? Are there tests that you're tempted to take that you have not actually signed up for? As we talk to science writer David Ewing Duncan, author of Experimental Man, What One Man's Body Reveals About His Future, Your Health, and Our Toxic World, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. I just want to get through the brain part, though. You spent 22 hours total having your brain scanned. Did I read that right?
Yeah, at least. I think I lost track after a while. It's actually fairly boring sitting in one of these machines hour after hour, but yes, it was a lot of time.
And what did you learn about your brain?
Well, the brain part for, again, a healthy person, that was the part that I found most mysterious and potentially scary to me. I was tested for what they call functional MRI, which looks for blood flows to different parts of your brain, like your emotional center or your rational center. And you're shown images. You're asked questions. I was tested for belief in God. I was tested for different products I like. Your brain can, you can actually think one way. I mean, for one test, I was shown a couple of movie posters. One was an art movie, Pan's Labyrinth, and one was Dodgeball, the movie.
Yeah.
And isn't it, you know, somebody that considers myself a writer, intellectual, of course, Pan's Labyrinth, oh, I love it. But my brain, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, liked Dodgeball.
So what do you actually learn from this? What do you know? What do you learn from knowing that your brain was more drawn to Dodgeball?
Well, I learned a little bit about what's really going on in my brain, and there's a conversation. What you see in these scans is actually there's a conversation going on in that case between the frontal lobe, you know, which is your rational part, your art movie part of the brain, and the more emotional part that might respond to a more emotional brain. But certainly marketing people, this is called neuromarketing, they love this stuff, and they're starting to scan people to see what products they really like.
We have a news flash coming in from the sociopath investor part of your brain, and people are going to be happy to hear this. This just happened. Disgraced financier Bernard Madoff has been ordered to jail and escorted out of the courtroom after pleading guilty to 11 charges this morning. So that was the big thing people were waiting to see at this Madoff court appearance. Would he be allowed to return to house arrest at his penthouse pending further legal action? And the answer is no. Bernard Madoff, straight to jail. Do not pass go. He's on his way right now. We will continue in a minute with science writer David Ewing Duncan. We'll start to fold in your phone calls. What tests are you ambivalent about or have taken or haven't taken? Our lines are full, but when people finish up, it's 212-433-WNYC, or you can post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Thank you. So if you have to go to jail, would you rather do it for tossing a shoe at the president or being Bernard Madoff? Both got sentenced today. But forget about that. We're talking with David Ewing Duncan, the science writer. You may know him from Morning Edition. And he has written a book called Experimental Man, What One Man's Body Reveals About His Future, Your Health, and Our Toxic World. He subjected himself to every imaginable MRI, CAT scan, blood test, DNA test to learn as much as he could and then figure out what it all means. By the way, you were telling me in the break that they've actually done scans. We got into this through the Bernard Madoff news. Scans of stock traders' brains to look for what?
Well, this is a whole new field called neuroeconomics, and leading center of this is actually at NYU here in New York City. And they're testing risk-taking and why people make irrational decisions. And we were just saying, you know, perhaps scanning why people would invest in a person that seems to have absolutely steady returns. I mean, you know, in some ways you think you're being safe, but is that an entirely rational view if you know anything about investing?
But did they find that stock traders, people who go into that line of work, tend to be more attracted to risk?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're trying to figure out why, you know, once they're attracted to the risk, then how they make decisions.
Uh-huh.
And you can actually see that, you know, again, you can see the blood flows in the brain, you know, going back and forth to different centers. Are they driven by emotional parts of the brain or the rational parts of the brain? You know, when does each one kick in? So it's pretty interesting.
Brendan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Brendan. Brendan, are you there? All right, wait a minute. Maybe I have to get Brendan over here. Brendan, do we have you?
Yes, you do.
Hi, you're on the air.
All right, great show. My situation was a little different because I was adopted as an infant, and I never got any genetic history of my family or origins. And in my 30s, I got diagnosed with a condition called hemochromatosis, which is an accumulation of iron in your system. And it's very much a Northern European genetic trait. And recently I had some eye issues, and the word glaucoma was mentioned. And here again, there was a constant questioning on, well, do you have any history in your family? Do you have any siblings or whatever? And obviously I can't answer those questions. So it's kind of intriguing to see what a full scan would reveal.
Yeah. So somebody who's adopted is in a unique situation in terms of making these decisions.
No, that's right. And it's interesting because there's a phenomenon of social networking going on, just beginning with like 23andMe and some of the online sites are actually allowing people to compare. And you also have ancestral DNA testing. And some people who don't know their background or adopted, don't know their parents or their family, are actually connecting up through these ancestral sites because they link you up with people. I in fact, although I know my family history, I found a long-lost cousin here in New York City who is a direct descendant of my great-great-great-great-grandfather. And she knows all about a side of the family that we didn't even know about. So I would encourage that. That's a very cheap test, and you can do it online.
Brendan, good luck. 23andMe, which you mentioned, is the company that anybody can really pay, I guess, a few hundred dollars to and get a complete genetic profile of themselves, right? We've interviewed a couple of people who've done that.
Right. It's actually not a complete. They do have a pretty wide spectrum look at your genetics, but they offer up, I think it's now around 80 or 90 genetic markers that are associated with disease and traits, things like color of your eyes and ancestry. They do that test too.
Right. We just had the evolutionary psychologist Steven Pinker on the show recently, who wrote all about his test using that technology and what he learned supposedly about his personality, though he doesn't give it much credence. And then there's a story in the business section of the New York Times today that Sergey Brin of Google is investing some of his billions in a study of DNA and Parkinson's because he's at risk for it, and he's working with 23andMe, which happens to be owned by his wife. Are you following that story?
Oh, yeah. No, I've been tested on 23andMe, and yeah, he came out, his mother has Parkinson's, and this is a highly heritable disease. You know, some are more, some are less heritable through the family, but he has a pretty high risk factor, and it doesn't mean, by the way, if you have one of these risk factors that you'll actually get it. And as he said in that article, he has about a 50-50 chance. You know, I'm not really sure what exactly statistically the chances are. But he is investing money in one of these social networking projects I was just describing in getting people to sign up at a very reduced rate who have Parkinson's to run it through their process at 23andMe and compare it to people who don't and try to find out what's going on there. And these are called association studies, and this is actually where most of these genetic results come from, is these types of studies comparing different populations.
And another adoptee writing on our website reveals some of her ambivalence. She says, I've thought about getting tests to give me information about the genetic potential for varying diseases, because I am adopted and I don't have much information about my biological family and their health. There are many different elements, however, that go into constructing our identity, and I suppose I don't want to be overly focused on genetics as being the predominant element.
Well, that's sort of singing my song in the book. I start the book with genetics, but that's just the beginning. The genetics is your blueprint, and I think we have a lot more information that we need to know about the environment, the brain, other aspects, and especially linking together a lot of these risk factors. Even the Parkinson's risk factor that Sergey Brin has could be affected or even modulated or made ineffective by other aspects of his genetic profile. And so we're really dealing with single points here. And I would agree with Steven Pinker. A lot of this information is very preliminary. And if you really look into the science, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to really make it completely useful for people.
A little more on Madoff, since this is just coming in. Ordered to jail, as I said, after pleading guilty to an epic financial fraud scheme to 11 counts, applause broke out in the courtroom after the judge's announcement. He revoked bail. The judge says the 70-year-old Madoff has the means to flee and incentive to do so because of his age. That was the basis on which bail was revoked, and Madoff was remanded immediately to jail for the giant Ponzi scheme. He does not get to await final sentencing in penthouse arrest. Hank in Colts Neck, you're on WNYC. Hi, Hank.
Good morning. I had a coronary CTA for myself, and I had a great experience, mostly because it was normal, but the entire experience was good because it let me see exactly what my coronary arteries looked like, and I didn't have to rely on statistical predictions of what my future risk of a heart attack would be.
Well, that's assuming that the picture of your coronary arteries taken by these machines actually tell you something useful. Are you ambivalent about that question, David?
Well, the CAT scan for hearts is getting better, and there's some studies that came out not too long ago from the American College of Cardiologists that it looks like getting a scan for a particular age, I can't remember exactly, it was probably over 50 or something, especially for men, has some usefulness. But it's expensive. You are exposed to radiation, and most cardiologists would probably wait until you have some, at least, symptoms, say high cholesterol or something like that. And, you know, it is a relief. I mean, I was relieved to see that mine was completely blank, too.
Well, Hank, go ahead.
It could be argued that once symptoms develop, the horse is out of the barn, and that knowing what your coronary arteries look like before you've developed plaque or before you've developed a lethal plaque, such as an ulcerated plaque, and to be able to see it and to do something about it is much better than before you present with your symptoms, which in many cases is your first heart attack.
No, that's right. And this test, though, each test is different, and each test has its own criteria. In this case, you know, you've got to be careful about testing a healthy person, exposing them to that level of radiation. A lot, you know, like I said, a lot of these tests are safe and that wouldn't enter in here. But heart attack is, there are a lot of other tests you can take. You know, I have a borderline cholesterol, you know, it's approaching 200, you know, slightly elevated blood pressure. Well, you know, that puts me in a category that maybe I'm getting closer to, you know, if I hadn't done this book, maybe that becomes closer to me needing the CAT scan. And it's not a dangerous condition that I'm in with this slightly elevated cholesterol. So in this particular case, you can get some clues before you get really bad. There's also some other tests you can take, like an ultrasound, before you get the CAT scan.
Hank, thank you. And I know some cardiologists now say that the top number cholesterol, that everybody seems to know their cholesterol number, it's 150 or it's 180 or whatever it is actually meaningless. and that in order to have any meaningful cholesterol reading at all, you have to do this fancier test that I think is only offered by one lab in Tennessee or something like that. Are you familiar with all this?
Yes, and it's not meaningless. What you find out when you start talking to people who are deep into this, I always love these little communities of people that sit around all day thinking about cholesterol levels. It's not a meaningless test. It gives you some indication. It's based on millions of people, and people who are over 200, that's usually the threshold, tend to have a higher risk than those below. So it has some statistical significance. But there's a new test out there called particle distribution cholesterol. And, you know, you have to kind of pronounce that very carefully. But I've had that test done, and that actually takes into account the fact your cholesterol is in a dynamic situation in your body. It's produced by the liver. It actually delivers lipids all over the body, which delivers energy to your cells. And it comes back. It starts out as a big blob, and it comes back as a little blob. And this test measures all those different size blobs. And that's one of the reasons I found out that I have a higher risk for heart attack, because my liver does not uptake those little blobs very well.
Uh-huh. Anne in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Anne.
Oh, hey there. How are you
okay.
guys?
Okay. Well, I'm okay. I'm not so sure about my guest, though. It's very complicated.
Hey, I know if I'm okay. Do you know, though, Brian?
I don't know half as much as you do. Go ahead.
Well, I'm really curious. I saw this article in the BBC that the World Health Organization and on the BBC website and the European Union were questioning the long-term safety of MRIs, and they were saying that a study needed to be done. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, I do have to say that as I got many hours logged in the MRIs, I kept asking, are you sure this is okay? And there's no evidence that I've heard about or that these neuroscientists could provide to me that MRIs are dangerous. There's, you know, millions of people have been tested in them, and there's no evidence. It does have a lot of magnetic energy going through your brain, which gives you pause to thought. But apparently, I haven't seen that study. You know, I'd like to see it. If there is some danger there, that should certainly be studied.
And thank you. And Jennifer is ambivalent about a genetic test. Is that right, Jennifer? Jennifer, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. You're on the air.
I'm just calling to bring up the issue that I heard you raise a little bit about the limits of genetic testing. I do believe that they can be very misleading, because as is finally being reported more in the New York Times and in the mainstream, gene expression and epigenetics, meaning, you know, the environment and how it affects our genes, really determines what the outcome will be. And so I have very mixed feelings about genetic testing, because I think that it can create a response expectancy, like a self-fulfilling prophecy in a sense, and a preoccupation that often is not necessary.
And downplaying the effect of environment on your health as well, right?
Yeah, I really think that, you know, in the nature-nurture debate, the gene has really been given so much of significance as though it's an end, and really it's only one piece, as I heard you say earlier. So, you know, I think the environment has a huge effect on the outcome of our genetics.
Well, I would totally agree with that. And in fact, probably the biggest news, I think, coming out of this book is an attempt by me and talking to scientists to link together genetics and the environment. And I came up with a rather cumbersome term, envirogenomics. But I think it's really important, and I was talking about mercury earlier and how it affects genes, but I think it's really important to realize that our genetics that we're born with is just our starting point. And in fact, how we develop, even from the moment we're conceived, has a lot to do with our environment. It starts in the womb, and it goes from there. So I think this needs to be much more further studied, and it's beginning to be.
You wrote that you learned something about God from MRIs?
I did. I was asked. I found myself at the National Institutes of Health in Washington in an MRI with a little click. You have these little clickers that you're holding where you have to answer yes or no. And I was asked, I was given the question, is there a God? And my brain activity went all over the place. You know, I personally, you know, rather agnostic, but I was raised, you know, in a religious family. My grandfather was a minister, and this troubled my brain a lot. And in fact, it was very active. And the person that was analyzing it said, well, you must have a very active belief in God, like a physical belief, because the motor parts of your brain are really lighting up. And I said, well, that's because I couldn't figure out whether to say yes or no on the button, you know, because that's a motor activity. Hmm. And I ended up saying, well, I don't know. I'm going to leave it for you to read the book to find out what I said.
Oh, so you're an agnostic, in other words.
Well, but I may have said yes. I may have said no. I had 8 seconds to ask, and my brain went crazy with the question.
Wow. Okay, people have to read the book, Experimental Man, What One Man's Body Reveals About His Future, Your Health, and Our Toxic World, in order to find out that answer and maybe answers about yourself. Journalist David Ewing Duncan, maybe you hear his science commentaries on Morning Edition, wrote the book. David, real quick, was there any test that you could have had done that you declined to have done?
No, and I'm still getting tests. But I do want to encourage people to go. We have a fabulous website out of my program at UC Berkeley called experimentalman.com, and you can get a vast amount of information. There are tests you can take yourself. How smart is your brain is one of the tests. So go check that out. We also have some events coming up in New York next week, which are also on the website.
Do you think there's a gene for fidelity?
I could have been tested. Well, not gene. I actually could have had my brain scanned for that, but we didn't get that.
We're about to hear next one woman's story of her open marriage.
All right.
So, David, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.